thinking back this morning to 1 year ago. 1 year ago this Sunday, I mean, when our Sunday morning service turned out to not be a service at all. Around the middle of the day on Saturday, the day before, it began to snow. And it snowed, and it snowed, and it snowed throughout the rest of the day, and the rest of the night, and on into Sunday morning. Majorly snow. We called off church school. Sandy told the choir to stay home if they didn't want to come out and brave the elements. And in time, I decided not to even go with having a service myself, but I figured instead I would just come down here and open up the building and see who else might be crazy enough to also make their way down here. As it turned out, about a dozen other crazy people showed up. Well, now that we're here, what are we going to do? We had planned to put up our holiday decorations after the service, just as we're doing today. So we hauled them out, and we started putting them up around here. We put on a pot of coffee first, of course. And I don't remember who it was that braved the ladder to hang up the red banners, but they got put in place with everything else. By around 11:30, everything was done. The extra stuff was put away. The coffee pot and cups cleaned and shelled, and we all went back out in the snow, which had finally stopped falling, and went home. So, of course, 1 year later, when I decided to do a Why I Don't Like Winter sermon, it's about 50 degrees. It's about 50 degrees out there, it's so good. That morning of 1 year ago provided me one of the things, one of the very few things, actually, I do like about winter. That is to say, I like it when it really gets so severe that it puts an end to all of your regularly scheduled plans. There was a certain kind of coziness to be found with just a few of us in this room putting up the decorations in a quiet and unhurried way. Whatever seemingly important holiday stuff we each and all had to attend to out there somewhere was, at least for a day or two, not so important after all. The workings of winter, at least momentarily, trumped our numerous human pursuits and activities and put us in a setting where we could, as I say, in an unhurried and unrushed way, be in easy company with one another. A few of us shared a little time, a little activity with each other, and then returned to our respective abodes. I went home thinking that maybe this is the way we're actually supposed to behave and act at this time of year. I really think the major tension of this season in our part of the world is that you have a world of nature that is providing us with all kinds of perfectly good and understandable reasons to slow down, hunker down, lay low, and not expend a whole lot of energy for a while, while at the very same time, we human beings turn around and behave in a more frantic way than we do at any other time of the year. I have a sneaking suspicion that it's the bears who have really got this whole winter thing figured out best of all. Just go curl up in a cave somewhere and take a good long nap until it's all over with. It makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. I honestly can't figure out, really, though, if it's winter as such that I dislike or if it's just the ways in which we try to act like we do like it. And here's a quick story. Here's a quick story to illustrate what I mean. The summer of 1974, 30 years ago, and I still remember it very vividly, I had just taken a campus ministry position at a university in central Wisconsin. I was getting ready to move there from relatively temperate climates of southern Indiana. On a hot August day, I made my way around Stevens Point, Wisconsin, looking for an apartment for myself. I was single. I was not all that picky about where or how I lived. So I very quickly found me a place in a decent enough apartment complex up there. And a very pleasant young lady who was the apartment complex manager was showing me around. And she had this kind of perky, wholesome way about her that so many upper Midwest folks seem to have and that Garrison Keillor likes to make such a big deal about. And as she and I walked through the parking lot, I noticed that at the head of each parking space, there was about a 3 or 4 foot metal pole coming up out of the ground with a little electrical outlet fixed to the top of it. I had never seen such things before, so I asked what they were about. in her upbeat way, the office manager said, "Oh, you'll need to get this thing from an auto supply place when you get up here so you can plug your car into this socket in the wintertime so it won't freeze up on you." It must have been the Lou Grant type of look on my face that flipped this sweet lady into her Mary Richards mode as she tried to reassure me. "Oh, really? You'll love winter up here. There's skiing and there's ice skating and ice fishing and winter carnivals and ice sculptures, and it's just great." This sweet young lady was just too plain nice for me to get grouchy with, so I did manage some kind of a pleasant response, and we went off to sign a lease. But I decided I had just witnessed a classic textbook case of denial. But the trick is to convince oneself just what an out-and-out happy good time winter is, as a way of not having to face the basic immutable truth that it's really actually well-rounded. Terrible. Living in northern climate zones for most of my life, I have really come to believe that the essential function of winter sports is to provide us with a device for denying sort of the basic meanness of the season itself. Now, okay, I will also not acknowledge it could be the other way around. Maybe I'm the one who's really in denial here. Denying, in this case, the essential joy of winter activity so I can maintain my curmudgeonly stance towards winter because somewhere in my subconscious strata, I actually love to hate it. Okay, I'll grant that. You would think at some point I'd make my peace with it. Except for that one brief sojourn in southern Indiana, and it's not exactly the tropics there either. I have lived in the northern regions of this country ever since I left my home in southern West Virginia in the late 1960s to go to theological school in Rochester, New York. But I've never been able to get with the program. The Winter in the North program, I mean, and I'm going to be 60 years old on my next birthday, so I am just flat out beyond help at this point in my life, and that, I'm afraid, is that. For all of you who truly love and feel blessed by outdoor activity at this time of year, and who can wax poetic about the joys of walking or snowshoeing or cross-country skiing through miles of bare tree white woods or gliding across a frozen lake, I can only say, God bless and go do it. I honestly envy you. I truly wish I could get some uplift from winter activity that I know many of you do. But I will keep smiling, and I won't keep up my brave front, knowing that spring is out there somewhere, and knowing the day will come when I can once again recite those wonderful opening lines from William Shakespeare's Richard III. "Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer." Okay. I have had my fun. Perhaps a little substance or sustenance would now be in order. For winter does have a certain metaphorical quality to it that I can appreciate and even treasure, just so long as my feet aren't freezing. Like most of us, I'm guessing, I do need my times when I can pull into myself, rediscover and reconnect with my internal resources of the spirit, and prepare for the challenges that living in this world at this time present to us. What I guess I'm saying is that an occasional winter of the soul can truly nurture the spirit. It's just the winter of the body that I can easily do without. And my favorite winter quote is really not one from Shakespeare, which I just cited, and which celebrates winter's end. But rather, it's one from Albert Camus that says, "In the midst of winter, I discovered that there was within me an invincible spring." That line is part of my personal sacred scripture. Now, maybe finding a sacred text in the writings of one of the 20th century's leading spokespersons and advocates for atheism may seem a little odd, but it's there nonetheless. For me, a sacred piece of writing is one that awakens my senses to those insights that bring a deeper level of understanding and a deeper level of meaning to the life journey itself, which is what these few words from Camus do. In the midst of winter, I discovered that there was within me an invincible strength. If we can somehow get beyond or beneath the often frantic and frenzied quality of this season, if only for a brief time, I think that is the real purpose of these holidays, whatever their specific celebration may be. It is to become reacquainted with those eternal and invincible springs that give us life for ourselves and call us to the thirst for life and call us to attend to a greater quality of life in our larger world. This is what we can make of these holidays, and this is how we can make these holidays the holy days that they are truly meant to be. This is the underlying theme or principle of the Christian Advent season that is now underway, a time of reflection and preparation for both the personal and global challenges that face all persons of faith and hope and goodwill. This is the human necessity that transcends the particularities of any one faith or faith tradition. Let me share with you these words by one of my colleagues in the UU ministry, Reverend Davidson Lair. He's the minister of the UU Church in Austin, Texas, which means he probably doesn't get a chance to do a sermon kind of like this. But they also speak to the point I've just been trying to make. Dave Lair. The real origin of these winter holidays is from deep within the human spirit. All of our holidays or holy days grow out of and are ways of expressing our need to feel more convincing connections to the earth, to our most cherished values, and to one another. We create our holidays like we create our gods, from our longings for reconnections to the sources of light and hope. We are like spiders, spinning our connections to the world from something inside ourselves that is seeking a place to stick to. And whatever our religion is, we know it is always possible. New hope and renewed trust can be born in us. But the truth is, that's hard to believe this sometimes. It's hard for me. It's probably hard for you too. Indeed it is. And that indeed is the call and the challenge of this season. To reconnect with our most cherished values. And to look toward the possibility of new hope and renewed trust. However difficult that may be. For as Reverend Lair says, it is hard to believe in that at times, especially at this time. But it is getting pretty cold out there. And I'm not referring now to the temperature on the other side of this wall over here, whatever that temperature may be. My opening winter lament notwithstanding, it is the climate in which we are now called to be bearers of joy and hope and peace and love. Use the four themes of Advent, but I'm finding far more chilling than any dip in the temperature or gray of the skies. The bodies of our young men and women continue to be shipped home from Iraq. An ongoing death and destruction continues to be heaped upon that sad country with no foreseeable end to it that I can see and say. I grieve for the families in this country who are losing sons and daughters and loved ones. And I honor the bravery of those uniformed American men and women who risk their lives on a daily basis. What disturbs me, what outrages me, actually is the lack of any clear and coherent reason or rationale as to why these lives are being risked and lost. Especially since the reasons given for such lives originally being placed in harm's way to begin with have been rendered false. Closer to home, an incident occurred this past week that left me shaking my head in both bewilderment and disgust. The United Church of Christ, one of the more liberal mainline Protestant denominations in our country, created a 30-second promotional piece to be aired on the major networks, as well as some cable networks, designed to show that their congregations are open and welcoming to to a wide variety of people, including, but in this commercial not limited to, but including gay and lesbian individuals and couples. Now, part of the message in this promo was that while some religious communities may be less than welcoming of such persons, they are welcomed and affirmed within the communion of the United Church of Christ. And the companion message is, sort of implied message, truth, implied truth is that there are indeed Christian faith communities in this country that do not consign homosexuality to the realm of sinfulness and depravity, as some of the more right-wing Christian communities do. Well, that's a very commendable message to be putting out there, and I salute our UCC sisters and brothers for putting it out there. Or trying to put it out there, I should say. While several cable networks have run the promo, both CBS and NBC refuse to do so. That is their prerogative. But listen now to the reason that CBS gave the United Church of Christ for their refusal in a letter from one of their network officials to one of their denominational officials. I'm quoting this from the Boston Globe. Because this commercial touches on the exclusion of gay couples by other individuals and organizations, and the fact that the executive branch of the current administration has recently proposed a constitutional amendment to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, this spot is unacceptable for broadcasting. Let those words sink in for a moment. Because the current presidential administration is attempting to constitutionally define marriage as a union strictly between a man and a woman, for this openly stated reason, a supposedly independent media outlet refuses to air a promotional piece by a religious organization that shows gay persons in a favorable light. And if that doesn't send a chill up your spine, I don't know what does. You might also want to bear this incident in mind next time you hear a right-wing talk show host ranting on about a liberal media. Like I said, it's getting cold out there. And I'm not talking now about the temperature in the physical atmosphere. Also point out that the United Church of Christ did not even approach ABC Network about running this promo. That's because ABC has a stated policy that they don't do any kind of religious promotionals at all. A football promotional in which a naked lady jumps into the arms of a football player apparently is all right, but none of this religious stuff. But let's not go there. The silver lining in this whole sorry episode is that it has accorded the United Church of Christ more publicity, largely favorable publicity, than the promo itself ever could have done had it just run on its own. In spite of itself, CBS has actually done the United Church of Christ a backhanded kind of favor. But that still does not eliminate the deeply disturbing reality that a major United States television was so cowed, as shown by its own stated acknowledgement, by the politics of a particular presidential administration, that refused to air a very brief, gay-friendly ad by a mainline religious organization. Such is the climate in which we now find ourselves. It is getting cold. Recall again just a few of Dave Lehrer's words. I cited earlier. We create our holidays like we create our gods, from our own longings for reconnection to the sources of life and hope. We are like spiders, spitting out our connections to the world from something inside ourselves that is seeking a place to stay. I would guess that some of you are about as fond of spiders as I am of winter, and I'm not terribly fond of spiders myself, but I still like Dave's spider metaphor. For it speaks to yet another reason for our being the liberal religious community that we are and that we attempt to be. We come here to spin our connections from something that was within us to the world that is outside ourselves, seeking a place to stick to. From our own spark of the divine, from the presence of the holy, from the life spirit, from the God or the goddess, call it what you will, that dwells in each one of us. All that is outside of us. This is the connection we see. And this is the reconnection to those sources of life and hope for which we long and for which we will continue to strive. A line from one of our hymns, not the one we're closing with today, but a line from one of our hymns says, "This heart, though all the world grow chill, will keep you warm." I thought of those words 1 year ago as a few of us who were here put up some of the hopeful symbols of this winter season, even as the power of winter itself is being shown on the other side of our walls and windows. This heart, though all the world grow chill, will keep you warm. The world can be very harsh with us at times. It can be harsh in some very personal ways, ways we all experience when an inexplicable loss comes upon us, and painful and uncertain times are visited upon us. We know these are times when we need the love and the care and the comfort of those with whom we are in community here. And I trust that spirit of love and care and comfort will continue to be among us throughout this season and in all the seasons of our life that we bring to this wonderful community. The world can be very harsh as well when the values and principles and human concerns we hold dear are violated or diminished or run roughshod over. And so we come here to be warmed from such cold harshness. But ours is a warmth that we simply cannot and must not hoard for ourselves within the confines of this community, comforting as it is here. It is rather a warmth that we must take from this place, in order that we may at least lessen by a few degrees the chill that we know is out there. This gets me to a final admission. To truly value and appreciate warmth, I guess you do have to know cold. Maybe that's why, in spite of myself, I've lived the greatest portion of my life in northern climate zones. So the glorious summer that I anticipate will really be glorious. I guess that's as good a rationale as any to get you through another winter, anyway. And yes, it can be very beautiful out there at this time of year. And yes, I am nurtured and even uplifted by that snowy beauty. It's just that I prefer to be nurtured by such beauty from a warm place. So I promise that I will at least try to appreciate beauty of this season, as I usually manage to do in seasons past. And to get me and the rest of us in the proper mood for such appreciation, how about we sing together our closing hymn, number 57, "All Beautiful," the March of Day.